Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So I woke up this morning wondering which of the dozens of words for snow that they have in Alaska I should use on the radio today. But alas, my thought was based on an urban legend. I started looking up on the web how many of these words I could find. But did you ever hear of Jeffrey Pullum's book, The Great Eskimo Vocabulary Hoax, published in the 90s? Well, neither did I until today, but it cites the Dictionary of the West Greenlandic Eskimo Language, which gives just two words for snow, as it turns out, kanik for snowflakes in the air and aput for snow on the ground. But as we will hear later this morning, there is a group that has many, many words for snow, the ski industry. So we will get that later in the program today. We'll also find out why the New York City public schools have much more stringent standards. No, not for reading or math or anything like that. Much more stringent standards for declaring snow days than most other school systems. Today is the first New York City public school snow day in more than 5 years. Congratulations if you are home and celebrating it, but we will talk about that later on. But I know that you're interested in this question too, and that is, should we nationalize the banks? You know how I know how interested you are? Well, we have a little box on our website, WNYC.org, that lists the five most listened to WNYC segments in the last week. And almost always, they are the five most recent episodes of Radiolab. And why not? Radiolab is probably the best thing on the radio, maybe ever. Sorry, Paul Harvey. But right now, one of our recent segments snuck past Jad and Robert onto the list. What was it? It was our interview with Joe Nocera from the New York Times, who was here the other day arguing for nationalization. And it is so confusing a topic that it's a good thing that NPR's Planet Money guys had another special this weekend on This American Life to explain the idea of the bad bank. So we are very lucky because they are here with us now, Adam Davidson and Alex Blumberg, and we're going to play some clips in case you missed it over the weekend and then talk to this Planet Money duo. So let's start with a clip. Here is a fascinating scene from that show in which economist Simon Johnson shows the guys a letter to the government from Deutsche Bank.
So you brought us this piece of paper today. This is having you laugh. Can you tell me what this is?
Well, it's a note from Deutsche Bank. It's part of their U.S. Daily Economic Notes
series. This is some staff economists there that send this out.
That's right.
Every
day. They send these around to clients and to people that they want to have conversations with. And, of course, it goes to government. These are very influential, these kinds of things. So this research note, can I just plunge in to say what's in it?
Yeah.
The title is eye-catching. It's called Falling Short, : the government needs to buy toxic assets. So it's a very straight statement. Obviously speaks to the issues of the week. And the paragraph, it's a one-pager. And the paragraph, the bolded text, they bolded it, that really struck me and I think summarizes the tone of it, is it says, ultimately, the taxpayer will pay one way or another, either through greatly diminished job prospects and or significantly higher taxes down the line. We think the government should do the following: estimate the highest price it can pay for the various toxic assets residing on financial institution balance sheets, which would still return the principal to the taxpayers. Now, if I can translate that.
You have a phrase for this note.
This is a robbery note. It's saying, guys, either you'll have 20% unemployment or national debt will go up to these dangerous levels unless you buy toxic assets, not for what they're worth, not for what the market price is, as much as you can pay.
Wow. So it is saying, I mean, the key line here is the taxpayer will pay one way or another.
And with that, we welcome back Alex Blumberg and Adam Davidson from NPR's Planet Money blog and podcast, and who made that special for This American Life this weekend. Hi, Alex. Hi, Adam.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Brian. How's it
and
going?
Alex, I apologize for mispronouncing your name about three times on the way in there. I know it's Bloomberg like the mayor, even though it's spelled B-L-U-M.
It's very confusing, I know.
Bloom is a much nicer sound than Bloom.
Yeah, it actually means Flower Mountain, if you want to know that.
Flower Mountain, okay. Yeah. Yeah. You don't want people calling you, hey, Flower Mountain, come here. So what? And we're going to open up the phones and always our comments page on the website. website is open. Maybe some of you heard the Planet Money, This American Life special over the weekend and have some follow-up questions because they did such a great job of explaining so many things. Maybe they pique your curiosity to go even deeper. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So, Adam, what was the government's reaction to that ransom note or robbery note, as you called it, from Deutsche Bank?
I mean, I think the government's reaction is to officially not have a reaction because they say the conditions that robbery note claims are in effect are not in effect. So,
meaning they're not insolvent?
Yeah, I mean, the general view, I would say, I think I can safely say a majority of people in the market, economists, finance people, people who are looking at this who don't work for the government would agree that in today's market value, many of America's leading banks are insolvent, and the only way to save them is for the government to take massive action of one sort or another, and there's a range of options. The government's official view is no, these banks are Citibank, Bank of America, all the banks, all the big banks and most of the small banks are well capitalized, they're safe, there's no need for the government to go to extraordinary lengths, they just need to do a little on the edges to help them through a rough recession.
And one idea in that clip, Alex, that was very central to your piece, how to value the toxic mortgages. Is it closer to what the homes are worth on the market right now or the value of the mortgage on paper? Because the answer to that question really has huge implications for whether, I don't know about Deutsche Bank, but probably for whether Citibank and Wells Fargo and a whole bunch of other major banks are solvent or insolvent, right?
Right. And it's just a huge, huge quandary of how do you value these assets? I mean, aside from part of the problem is that there's just not that much information available publicly about what assets are actually on the bank balance sheet. So I've talked to a bunch of people who sort of analyze the bank balance sheet, and they say, you just don't really know. It has a line that says, consumer loans, $600 billion, but you can't really drill down and sort of find out, is that like loans to subprime borrowers in inland parts of California, or is it like Fannie Mae loans that are pretty safe and well underwritten? There's no way to know. So that's one of the problems.
And so Deutsche Bank was trying to get the government to buy at top dollar rather than at bottom dollar. Is there a right answer, Adam? That, it's probably not the top dollar and it's not the bottom dollar. Is there a right answer?
I mean, the United States, the Western world, has developed a way to figure out the value of things. It's called the market. It's supply and demand. There are other ways. Soviet Union, the government would set prices. When I did reports from Iraq, the government would set prices under Saddam. That's another way. We don't have that way. And so in our way of valuing things, there's either no way to value these assets, or alternatively, there is a way. These things are sold, but at extremely discounted rates, and that would kill the bank. So the government is saying, we don't want to do the normal way, and there's no right way. There's a range of options, and so let's say there's a toxic asset that was sold for $100. There's some hedge fund out there who's willing to pay $12 for it. The government knows that if Citibank sold all of them for $12, Citibank would collapse because it would lose $88. So the government says, no, we want something between 12 and 100. Now, if that's closer to 100, it's basically a taxpayer subsidy to the banks. If it's closer to 12, it risks destroying the banks. So where you pick is a political decision. But it's not an economic decision. It's not an objective decision.
And I guess this is where the outrage on the part of so much of the public comes in, too. When you hear something like that Deutsche Bank letter, Alex, they are saying on the one hand to the government that they need help because in the free market, the mortgages are worth so little. Mm-hmm. But they're asking the government to pay something close to the maximum that they might be worth.
Right. I mean,
or what they used to be worth.
Yeah, exactly. And to me, the outrage seems very similar to the Rick Santelli rant on CNBC that people were talking about, where he was just sort of the Chicago Tea Party, where he was very angry at the government's plan to bail out homeowners, which is basically sort of the same thing. I mean, I guess in his view, I'm not sure. I don't know enough about the plan. But the idea is that you buy a mortgage that you can't afford anymore, the house is for too much money, and if the government were to come in and just sort of subsidize that mortgage, it's sort of the same idea here with the banks, where they bought these assets that are worth way for a much higher price than they're worth now, Do you really want the government coming and just making the difference? You know, if they're worth 50 now, but the government, but the bank bought them for 100, you know, it seems, yeah, it's understandable.
And I do want to say there is zero debate about the morality or what's the right thing to do. I don't think anyone disagrees. The right thing to do is to let the banks collapse and face the pain and face the full implications of their bad investment choices. I think the banks would, in their heart of hearts, agree with that. The issue is that the government has determined that that will, I don't think you can exaggerate it too much, that will destroy the world economy. And so that's why we're having this discussion.
And that brings us to the second clip that I want to play from your piece. This is about 2 minutes long, where you explain the latest news, really, that the new plan from the Obama administration does not buy lots of toxic assets to ensure the bank's solvency, like Deutsche Bank wants them to do, nor is it nationalizing the banks, as economist Simon Johnson argues here, that it is better to do quickly because the major banks like Citigroup are already broke and already hemorrhaging taxpayer dollars.
The longer you wait, the more you prevaricate, the more it's going to cost you. This is the U.S. government we're talking about. These people, when they get organized, when they get focused, they get things done. This is the greatest country ever in the face of the earth. We have plenty of talent. There's no shortage of brain power. Just do it.
Now, you might have noticed that the government is not doing either of these options. Instead, they're doing sort of halfway versions of both. They have not committed to buying up all the dollhouses and other toxic assets at something closer to their full price. But they have created a new trial program that allows the government to help subsidize private investors who, they hope, will buy a lot of these assets. And when it comes to option two, the government is not forcing the banks to sell their assets or value them at what they could get on the market right now. The government is not taking over the banks. They're not nationalizing them. In fact, the government has gone out of its way to give banks money without taking control. They've given banks over $240 billion, including $45 billion to Citibank alone. But the government structured the deal in a special way, specifically designed so it was not a nationalization. And this week, when Citibank's troubles got worse, the government had to go through these amazing contortions to help the bank without becoming its owner. Because the government, and all of them, from President Bush and Henry Paulson to President Obama and Tim Geithner and Ben Bernanke, they all say the same thing. They don't want the government owning banks. Now, Alex, I always think that there is another option. The government could just let the banking system sort things out on its own. If banks made bad bets, then they go out of business. It's not our problem.
Well, the Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke dismissed this option when he told Congress in a private briefing that it actually is our problem. He was quoted as saying, "If we let the banking system fail, no one will talk about the Great Depression anymore because this will be so much worse."
Yikes. More Alex Blumberg and Adam Davidson from That's This American right. Life this weekend at NPR's Planet Money. Right. And our lines are full, and people want to ask you a lot of follow-up questions about this piece and the ideas therein. But let's pick up right on that scary thought from Ben Bernanke, and I think, Adam, that's pretty much how you led into the clip, because there's an underlying question here that he touches on, but that I want to know more about, and that is, what is the downside of bankrupting the shareholders? Nationalizing, as Simon Johnson wants, to fix the bank's balance sheet, but sending... Well, okay, there are two things here. I don't want to confuse people in a segment where we're trying to clarify. There are really two things. One is, why not just let the banks fail in the marketplace? Why would that trash the world economy? Wouldn't then the FDIC take care of the insured shareholders, and then some other new banks would spring up and start all over again?
I mean, Alex. The problem is that most of the people, like if you think of depositors in a bank, like most of us, like a savings account, like we have, you know, most of us probably have less than $250,000 in our savings account, and we are loaning that money to the bank. When we have a savings account, we're loaning that money to the bank. That is protected money. So if the bank were to go under, the government would make us whole.
Pay us, right.
But there's a lot of people who loan the bank money in much greater sums. like millions and billions of dollars at a time.
Pension funds and, you know, institutional investors and really rich people.
And really rich people. And there's just, and that is the main way these big banks sort of function, is getting this huge institutional money, which if the bank were to just fail and those people were not made whole, that would just set off this entire chain reaction of sort of events, because that is, you know, that would mean that your pension fund loses. Your pension fund is lending probably banks a lot of money right now, millions or billions of dollars. And if the bank were to go bankrupt and then they would not be able to pay it back, then your pension fund takes a hit. And that has these consequences on down the road. It's just sort of this horrible spiral.
Which is very different from shareholders, people who have placed a bet. I'm going to buy a share of Citibank. I'm going to be one of the many owners of Citibank. And I am taking on the risk that that implies.
So that's the other question that I started to ask. Other than for those investors who took their private sector uninsured risks, bets on the marketplace, on Citibank and these other banks as companies, why not nationalize the banks?
I think it becomes practical and political. I think it leaves the world of that I always feel most comfortable in, sort of economics. You know, I like a world where it's frictionless and it's in a vacuum and it's just how it should be. And then when you get into the messy world of politics, I mean, you know, Chuck Schumer is one of the most powerful people in Congress. He has, you know, close ties to the banking industry. So does Barney Frank. So does Chris Dodd. There's also very real pragmatic issues. I mean, Alex knows a lot more about the FDIC process than I do. But the estimates we've heard is we're talking about basically empowering thousands and thousands of people who don't work for the government to come and work for the government to oversee these large banks. So I don't think that there's an inherent economic argument against letting the banks collapse. I don't know that there's an inherent economic argument against nationalizing them.
Can I speak to the logistics a little bit? Just because the government does take over a bank or two every once in a while, and they're taking over more now, and they're small community banks, little banks with, like, you know, millions of dollars in assets as opposed to trillions that are on Citibank. And even that is a huge job. I mean, basically the way the government takes over a bank is sort of fascinating. They have to, it's sort of like a SWAT team procedure. They have to go in on Friday night and they have to they have to check in under assumed names.
Sleazy hotels.
Hotels so that nobody knows. They have to line up a buyer for the bank that they're taking over, and that buyer has to be on strict confidentiality, has to be on hold, and then they just sort of move all at once on Friday night, and then they work all weekend taking over a bank. And this is a tiny community bank in some sort of small town somewhere. And so just all that manpower has to be motivated just to take over one tiny community bank somewhere. Just imagine Citibank is, you know, hundreds of times as large as that.
People who know this stuff much better than Alex and I do, some tell us there's no way it could happen, and others tell us, no, it's not that hard. They could do it. So we don't actually
it's hard
know.
To say. The one thing that you can definitely say, though, is it's utterly unprecedented for this country and a huge, huge step and very scary. And I have great, you know, sympathy for any policymaker who is, like, contemplating nationalizing our largest banks. I mean, that is just a huge, huge step.
I don't think Sheila in Washington Heights is convinced. Hi, Sheila, you're on WNYC.
Hey, Brian, you got that right. Simon Johnson made it perfectly clear last night that the IMF has gone into many countries that came up with the same rationales and arguments about how difficult it was. And he said, look, technically, it's just not that difficult. It's possible, it's doable, but there's a political impasse. And whenever your guests or any other person starts talking about this, they always talk very clearly about the balance sheet issues and the dollars and cents, and it's very rational. But then the conversation gets really murky about the political impasse. And I guess my question is this. Since Obama's campaign contributions came primarily from individual contributors, why is he tethered to the banks? Because we understand now very clearly that it comes down to the question, who's going to lose here?
You want to do some more of the – you started down this road a minute ago. Do you want to do any more of the politics?
I'd like to amplify just first the Simon Johnson thing, because he said some stuff that we didn't put in the piece that I found really interesting.
And so, by the way, let me also mention that before we even heard that Simon Johnson was on your piece, we've got a standing we've got an invite out to him to come on here on this Thursday show. So hopefully we'll be able to follow up on these provocative Simon Johnson comments with Simon Johnson on Thursday. But Adam, go ahead.
Sure. Well, what he told us is he was the chief economist for the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, which goes around the world, and when a country has what they call a sovereign bank crisis, when their entire banking system collapses, the IMF is often the one that comes in and tells them what to do, often with strong U.S. support. And he says it's pretty straightforward. You nationalize the banks, and this happened in Indonesia, Malaysia, Korea. I mean, there's dozens of countries. And he says, when you look at the banking sector as a percentage of the economy, the U.S. banking sector is surprisingly small. It's about 50%,
I think
of our
40%.
40% of our GDP. And there are countries like Iceland where the banking sector is several multiples of the economy, of the GDP. So he feels that the technical challenges are not hard. Other people, though, I will say, like Bill Isaac, former FDIC head, tells us, no, it's much harder than Simon realizes.
And in terms of nominal amounts, that, you know, nationalizing the U.S. banking system would probably be it would cost the most money of any time in history. But in terms of percentage of GDP, it's actually much smaller than a lot of other things that have happened.
But Alex, is the U.S. as of last week already the largest shareholder in Citigroup? We've got 36% now, right?
Right.
So do we have 36% of the votes at Citibank shareholder meetings?
More like 80% would be my guess.
I mean, I think probably Citibank will probably do whatever the government tells it to
really?
Do.
Really? Read in the Wall Street Journal this weekend is that the government is bending over backwards not to tell them to do anything. There's no strings attached to this that requires them to lend a certain amount of money, that requires them to replace their executives.
But there was that other article in the Journal last week that Citibank executives are going, oh my goodness, we can't do anything without Treasury Department approval. It's a confusing picture. I think that on any day, if a bank regulator calls a banker and says, we want you to do this, that carries a lot of weight. When it's the middle of a crisis and it's the most powerful Treasury Department in history and they own a third of you, you have influence. Whether they're exercising that influence or how they are, we don't know. That is secret.
Giovanni in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning. I think that your guest and yourself would really clarify the issue and should clarify the issue when you use the word banks. I think when you're saying nationalizing banks, you're talking about nationalizing financial institutions. Most of the banks, practically all the banks, are well capitalized. They don't have to be nationalized. And banks are thrift associations, has depositors. Financial institutions have investors. And when you...
Let me jump in, because this is such a major point of dispute. Whether these major banks, like Citigroup and Bank of America, are well capitalized and don't need to be nationalized, meaning temporarily owned by the government. I saw Barney Frank on CNBC last week saying, okay, you CEOs claim your banks are so well capitalized, then give us back our money.
Right.
We'll take away any strings that we may have attached to your actions. Just give us back our money. And none of them are doing it. So, Giovanni, what do you think about that?
Again, the word banks are wrong, because the financial institutions have the problem. They're holding the toxic assets. They're holding the securities that they bundled and sold off to the rest of the world. If you look at that $240 billion that was sent out under TARP, it all went to financial institutions, not the banks. Citigroup has got three entities. Citibank, which is a bank, a thrift association, doesn't have to be nationalized.
Okay, we're going to run out of time soon. But is he making a useful distinction between financial institutions and the banks they own?
I would say yes. I'm going to admit I don't know enough, but I think what he's saying is that there are certain institutions that are simply banks that do, you know, they accept deposits and they loan out money in a sort of a straightforward classical sense. And I think he's right. Those institutions aren't in as much trouble, although some people said the shoe's about to drop for them as well. But yeah, but these big institutions like Citibank, they are more than just banks. They have trading desks. They have all sorts of. They got into credit default swaps.
Although they're regulated, the word is used is universal bank. We can get into definitions, but the word that the government uses, that common parlance, is bank. So if you want to differentiate between large universal banks and small thrifts. I don't know. You're It's a technical
30 seconds. How would Simon Johnson answer this question? Why would the government be any better at restructuring a bank for solvency than the private owners?
I think he would say the private owners don't have enough capital to cover the debt.
The simple answer is that the government actually has money, right?
Yeah, the government can make more.
Yeah.
There you go. Adam Davidson, Alex Bloomberg, NPR's Planet Money Guys. You heard maybe their full-length piece on This American Life this weekend. You can download that still. You can see their work at NPR.
NPR.org/money.
Right.
And you have a Planet Money podcast and a Planet Money blog.
And we're on the radio sometimes.
Right. And at thisamericanlife.org.
Or thislife.org.
Yeah. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. There are a few places that you can't hear Adam and Alex, but I don't know where they are. We're going to talk to Katrina VandenHeuvel from The Nation in just a minute. She's going to make the case for the ambitious Obama budget. Stay with us.